Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Wood Talk, crafting artisanal sawdust since 2007. Now here are your hosts, Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
All right, it is show number 521, and on today's show, we're talking about woodworking magazines, communicating with our followers, and do we actually need to upgrade tools in order to get better? But before we get to that, I want to let you know that Wood Talk is brought to you by Rockler. Rockler has been helping customers create with confidence for over 65 years. Rockler is giving away a $250 gift card to one lucky Wood Talk listener. Enter for your chance to win before April 30th at rockler.com/woodtalk.
And if you want to help support the show, you can do so. You can head over to patreon.com/woodtalk and sign up and become a patron of the show. Thank you to all our wonderful patrons over there who continue to support us for some unknown reason.
Yeah. We'll never know. And I also want to say for folks who have done that, we do have your names there. They're accumulating. We just didn't get them once again for this show, but we will get you next time and mention your name on the show.
Oh, good. The list is going to be extra long next time.
People love it.
Just
man.
What I need.
It's a better chance of a really complicated name coming down.
Just yeah. Basically going to be a whole show. Just yeah. Matt's going to read names. Okay. Good night, everybody.
Okay. Goodbye.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
That's our time.
All right, so I didn't initially have a what's on the dining table topic, which tends to veer into the off-topic things, but I thought it would be really nice to do one of the tactics that Nicole and I employ at our own dining table. We try to do it every night, but it doesn't always happen, but we try to. That is...
defensive eating.
As we're eating, we want to torture our children by making them recount something good that happened during the day. And I thought it would be fun, to kind of go around... our virtual dining table and ask each other, what good thing happened to you? What pleasant thing occurred in this last week that is worth telling the audience about? And it doesn't have to be about woodworking. It could be about anything at all. Just a good moment. That's all we need. So Matt, can you think of one? Something good.
Nothing that's appropriate for the show.
What about when I stopped into your live show yesterday? That wasn't one of those moments?
That's always a good moment.
I was in there heckling you from the chat room.
Barely, though.
Mm.
You're not very good at that anymore.
I was in the middle of
it. Is that what it is?
Well, honestly, I'm going to tell you why I don't do this. Because of Lindsay. I feel like she
because
might,
of her?
Well, yeah, because I feel like I don't want to make her feel bad or I don't want to make her dislike me. I'm not worried about you.
I think it's too late for that.
Yeah, I don't know, man. That sounds difficult. I mean, that could be a challenge in itself.
Yeah. I'm conscious of the wives. Like same thing with Heather. If you guys did a live show, I wouldn't want to anger Heather or make her be like, wow, that Mark guy, what a prick. Yeah.
He's always in here saying something stupid.
Always say, come check out my video I posted today.
Oh, please do that. There you go.
Could you
I'm in here self-promoting.
I made a video today.
Here's a link.
Can I post the link? Is that okay? Admin, delete if not allowed.
Yeah. The good thing is you didn't do that.
No.
On my live show. So there's my good thing.
I would never do that, but still. Yeah. Good times. Okay.
I have a good thing.
You got
anything? I have a good thing for you. Okay. I do. So it has to do with our home renovation remodel thing. Mm-hmm. And it actually has to do with Lindsay as well. So I think it's a good one. We had we went stone shopping, as we talked about last time, on Thursday. And honestly, every single time we do anything with this, Lindsay's in like some other place with like, I'm thinking about work or not really there, excited about what's going on. But on Thursday, she took the day off and was like totally like in the moment and committed to the process of designing her kitchen. Mm-hmm. And we had like some of the best designing stuff moments ever, which is how that kind of countertop decision came about, because she was like, I like this one a lot. Hmm. Like, you've never been that you never made that much of a concrete decision on anything.
Yeah.
And like, this is great. So that's my good time.
You got a blank slate there, which I think creatively can be a challenge. So to have at least a couple of decisions you're absolutely sure about, I could see that being very, very good.
It was the most absolute thing so far in this whole process. We've been designing for over a year.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty good. Well, what about you, Shannon? What happened great in your week this week?
Actually, it is woodworking related. I was talking about miter joinery in one of my mini Zoom sessions, and somebody brought up the technique of closing up a miter by sawing along the joint. You know, so if you've got two miters and if you actually run a saw along that joint line, you create a parallel sided curve, which can allow you to close up a miter. And someone in the Zoom brought that up, and I said, oh yeah, it's a very effective technique. And then somebody asked a question, well, wait, what is that? And I was trying to show it, and basically it was just running out of time. So I said, well, here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna go ahead and create a video. This is in the school on that. And in creating that video, I've known about that technique for many years. I've actually done it a couple times. I remember seeing Roy Underhill do it once to close up a miter dovetail, but I've never actually really focused on it and tried to kind of understand why it works and how it could be employed like outside of just the miter. Mm-hmm. And it was actually kind of an epiphanal moment for me. I realized I may never use a shooting board ever again. That technique is so effective. And then I started realizing it has a lot of far-reaching applications just outside of miters. There's a lot of ways that you can use that saw curve method to create compound joinery, compound butt joints, things like that. And that has led me into kind of different ways of thinking about how I use all of my tools. Mm-hmm. So basically, since I decided to go all hand tools, shoot, more than a decade now, there's been like, I call it my power tool upbringing. Like inside of this hand tool woodworker is a power tool woodworker, because that's how I learned. Like, we all watch Norm, you know, and you
that's
learn
how
to build. Yeah.
You're a big, tall, goofy guy with a table saw.
That's right.
And a complicated name for your show.
Right. But all of your kind of processes and how you build something is derived around that power tool process. And as I started moving into hand tools, I actually found it more of a struggle, because I was still thinking in terms of how, like, I process lumber, I mill lumber using power tools. And slowly but surely, I've kind of shed that upbringing and thinking more like really probably what like our forefathers thought, like there was no such thing as a table saw. And this was just one more step. And again, without getting too detailed on the actual technique and stuff, to me, it was just a very exciting moment. And, you know, when you're doing something a long time, it's not that, you know, you feel like, oh, I can build anything, but you kind of like nothing is new. Like, yes, I know that technique. I've tried that technique. I've done that technique. I was successful or unsuccessful. you know, it's rare that you get somebody that says something to me about woodworking that I'm like, oh, I've never heard of that before.
Totally new information.
And while the technique itself wasn't new, kind of thinking about it closer was really exciting. And I'm still quite excited about this. And my head is kind of still swimming on how I can employ some of this philosophy that's coming out of it. And to me, the fact that like to shoot this video, like I ran home at lunch and shot like 45 minutes of it before running back to the office. And it's just, it was cool. It was like a, by saying a reinvigoration, it makes me sound like I was burnt out. I'm not, but this was just a really kind of exciting moment for me, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Good for you.
Good for you.
Good for you.
Go on, honey.
For my thing, I like to pretend that I enjoy planting things. And on a yearly basis, I like to plant things in our garden, and my dogs find a way to destroy it every year. So we're very limited in what we can plant because no matter what I do, Dougie will start chewing on the irrigation system, or now Abby is completely crazy and she will probably knock stuff down. So I'm just thinking of the planting season that's coming. And at the very least, I like to grow lettuce. I eat a lot of lettuce. It's one of my favorite things to eat, and it's very fairly easy to grow. But I just don't have success with it because of the morons that I have as dogs, the knuckleheads. So for Christmas, Nicole got me this hydroponics little setup, a little aero garden. And I was really excited about it. My mom then did, you know, the Jersey Debbie Downer thing and said how bad they are, that they don't actually work. And I said, I will show you. I'm going to grow this lettuce. And sure enough, I have been eating lettuce out of that thing for, well, since Christmas time. And it's actually really, really cool. So I decided to up the ante a little bit, and I treated myself to a larger hydroponics setup that will allow me to not only grow my lettuces, but some fresh herbs. I even got a little, like a little dwarf cherry tomato plant. And this, like, I had to prove to myself that this would work because it's like, it's just nutrients in water and the root system is growing in water. How could this possibly result in an actual, you know, piece of edible, you know, plant? and it does, it works. It works really well. So I've got this thing that I've been setting up today. It's a much larger unit. I could plant a lot more pods. And it's great because it's the middle of winter and I'm just pulling fresh lettuce off of these things. So, I, you know, screw outside. I'm going to be planting my stuff inside where my dumb dogs can't get to it. So that was my positive this week. I got my little unit and I'm going to set it up and I'm going to grow things and I'm going to eat them and try to get my kids to eat them. And they're going to say no. And it's going to be it's going to be great.
Try to get your dogs to eat them. They're going to say yes.
I'll force the dogs to eat them.
Maybe you need to cook the lettuce in a cast iron skillet and the kids will eat it with lots of butter.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. We always need the butter. It's my favorite thing. If you get in the cast iron, stainless steel, different cookware where people brag about, oh my God, it's nonstick. And they show you how well this egg slides around in a quarter inch of butter. It's like, you could cook that on a cinder block in a quarter inch of butter and it would not stick. Come on, people. Anyway. Good stuff. So yeah, that was for me. Well, this was a lot of fun. I think when we don't have a topic, that this might be a fun thing to do.
Well, your mention of Dougie, I need to send you a video. You might have even seen this, but there's this girl doing planks in the at home in her home gym.
Yeah.
And her bulldog comes up and so imagine she's doing a plank, but she's like an elevated plank, her feet are up on a bench.
Yeah.
So the dog comes underneath her and her shirt is obviously hanging down because she's in a plank. The right. dog then proceeds to climb up the inside of her shirt.
Oh no.
And sticks his head out the neck hole of her shirt and starts licking her face while she's in this plank. And you think of like how solid Dougie is. Yeah. This is this petite little girl. And the dog then decides, okay, I'm done. I'm going to walk away. And he basically like carries her away.
Oh my God. So it went from cute to being disastrous.
No, it's still pretty cute.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just makes me think of Dougie.
Bulldogs have a respecting of space problem. Like when they put it into their heads that they need to be in a certain spot, they're going to get there whether you want them to or not.
It helps that they have a mass of a neutron star at the same time too.
Yeah,
just exactly. Move things out of the way to get there. It's awesome.
Yeah, very good. All right. So let's get to our, I guess we got some kickback.
Let's talk wiener kickback.
Yeah, actually the first piece is a piece of kickback. So.
All right. Well, this is from John and he's kicking back about our wiener woodworkers. He says,
he's kicking us back in the wiener.
Yep, straight in the wiener. Thanks for doing the show. It's a great lesson. I have a confession though. I tick most of your wiener woodworker boxes, but I'm okay with that. My initials are in my handle, JM Woodcraft. I sell on Etsy since early last year. I have an Instagram account as of late last year, which is at JM_Woodcraft_Scotland. There you go. There's your plug. I post pictures. I post pictures of chopping boards. I'm a weekend warrior, et cetera, et cetera. I suspect there's a good few of us out there. And I figured I'd write in since we've become strangely for a woodworking podcast, since we've become strangely for a woodworking podcast as aspiring woodworkers, a bit of a joke recently. I've been woodworking for around 7 years. I work long hours in my normal job, have 2 kids, so I don't get much time at it. So the learning curve, it's much slower than if I managed to do it full time. That said, the things I make now compared to 7, 5, even 2 years ago are all much better, and I'm sure I'll continue to improve as I get more practice. I don't know another woodworker in real life, so YouTube, podcasts, and Instagram are incredibly useful for me for ideas, inspiration, and getting the confidence to give things a go. As a fellow introvert, I had no social media at all a year ago, and the thought of advertising my skills and products filled me with both horror and terror. However, I'd make pretty much everything I need in my house and a few good friends and family, and I wanted a way to keep making things I enjoy and be able to recoup some of the costs, and it's working for me. I've been busy since I started, nowhere near busy enough to be full-time, but I've taken a few custom jobs that I price very fairly to refine my skills and make sure they're good enough before they go to the customer. On Instagram, I've connected with and talked with a few other wiener woodworkers, bringing a bit of a community for me that otherwise I wouldn't have. I like seeing what these guys and girls are making, and I'd like to offer praise where it's due in comments where they are asked for and get the same in return. It's nice, and isn't community a big part of what woodworking should be? This reads like a rant, but it isn't meant to be. Maybe it is. I'm not sure now. Anyway, my point is that there's probably a lot of wiener woodworkers like me who follow you guys and your show, so maybe some more encouragement and less bleeping on us would be good. For any newbie woodworkers out there, taking a step up to becoming a wiener woodworker has been an incredibly positive experience for me, and I'd highly recommend giving it a go. I hope nobody lets any perceived negativity put you off. Sorry for all the words. Looking forward to the next show and seeing what you're up to on YouTube. Good luck with the new toys you plan on buying, Mark. They should be fun as well. Wiener John from Scotland. There we go.
Well, to be fair, we only crapped on wiener woodworkers for one show. It's just one show. I mean,
and basically all we did was read what Chris Schwarzes wrote. So we didn't.
Yeah.
We were just delivering the message.
Go yell at Chris. All right. Yeah. So here's what I wanted to, I mean, I actually did abbreviate that email a little bit, but I wanted to get the whole thing in there because I think John, I want his perspective to be heard. But the more I looked into this, the more I started to think, well, wait a second. Is he really a wiener woodworker? And I went to his Instagram page and I see some fairly basic projects. He's got some slab stuff. He's got some epoxy pours. You know, a lot of the stuff that's currently trendy. I don't know that I see the wiener woodworker that he's saying he is.
You're not a wiener.
I even went back to Chris's post to read all of the bullet points of you might be a wiener woodworker. If most of what Chris put in there are people who are trying to create this facade of success and this facade of a certain like level of trendiness with what's current. It was mostly about people who are trying to present themselves as something they are not. I don't think it was about people who are just at the beginning of their journey who are starting to sell things on Etsy. Right. So I don't recall the conversations as well as I should, but I look at his page and I go, yeah, man, this is a dude who's just doing his thing. You know what I don't see are a lot of this stuff that Chris mentioned in there, you know, all the, anyway, you can go back to that episode if you want to hear all those things, but I don't see it. I don't see what he's talking about. I think he maybe has a little bit of a, I don't know, maybe he's down on himself about this. I think the stuff he's posting here, he should be proud of.
It is interesting because if you go back like to when we all started, you know, before this, well, not that it's a mainstream career anyway, but, you know, the thought of making it a career was the furthest thing from my mind when I started a blog and when I started like posting stuff. It was about community. It was always about community. It was connecting with, you know, the other wieners out there. And what's interesting is social media. I feel like social media has become a career path now. And when you start posting as a hobbyist, wanting to share, wanting to find other woodworkers, it's like you're now on a path to the point where you're eventually going to go pro. And that,
you have to fight against I think actively.
Yeah, yeah. And what is also interesting, I can't remember if this was in Chris's list or not, but a true sign of a wiener woodworker to me is when the photos you see in their feed are less about the project they made and more about the woodworker himself. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of posing with the project, but maybe the project's like in the background.
Yeah.
Like there's lots of
soft focus.
Right. It's so obvious that most of the photos in that required a tripod or someone else to take it because they're in the picture themselves.
Yeah, it's more about their image than the project they're making. And that said, he has none of that on there. I don't even know what this dude looks like. I see a cute kid. It's the only person that I saw in his feed. I think he's being hard on himself. I think he's doing great. I also think since he's from Scotland, he should have called in instead of writing this.
Yes.
Because we like the accents.
Right. Yeah. Because as Shannon I was reading it, I heard Mike accent. Myers in my head the whole time. So.
Yeah, a really bad Scottish accent.
Really bad.
Yeah.
We've got great. A paper dune.
Well, look, the thing I learned here is that you should just embrace your wiener if that's what you're going to do.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. But not your neighbors, because that'll get you in trouble.
Right.
Without asking, anyway. You can
and
ask.
I think if it's not clear, I think we are always welcome to beginner woodworkers. We make, you know, jokes around this stuff because we've been there, we've done that. But I do like to think that we are welcoming. But I also think if people are really doing all those things that Chris laid out in his blog post, you know, it's okay to crack some jokes about some of these things because some of it is silly. I just don't think I don't think John Mason here fits into that category.
Nope.
Anyway,
but you can call yourself a wiener woodworker anyway, John. Be proud of it.
Yeah, totally fine.
I think, do you have more tattoos than router bits?
I mean, how do you quantify large tattoos?
That's the problem. That's the problem with your body.
I think it's
work.
Square footage.
Body
work. You have to talk about percentage of square footage. You
know. Yeah, total and I think the thing canvas. Is, if you look at all the sessions that it took to get to where I am with the tattoos, like does each session count as a quote unquote tattoo? I don't know. I don't make the rules.
I already forgot about most of these because it's been like a month since we looked at them.
I had to go back and look at them.
I'm like, oh yeah, there's, and then from last episode, your workshop has a logo, but no insurance.
Right. Yeah,
that's we just relevant. About that.
Uh-huh. That's what I'm saying. You look at all of the parameters he laid out there, and it's mostly about presenting an image that isn't actually, you don't have the skills to back up what you're putting out there. And I don't think that, you know, this person in particular is presenting anything that's not true or inflated in any way.
I think the important thing, and this back to that, sorry to belabor this, but back to this whole career path thing, there is nothing wrong with being a hobbyist woodworker and selling some stuff, like selling some things to buy the next tool. There is no reason you have to take the next step.
That was goal number one for me, right? Like if I could get there, that's how this process started.
Absolutely.
A hobby that funds itself is kind of, you know, for a lot of people, that's the goal.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay. Well, you guys want to talk about Florida? Speaking of wieners. Yeah. Whoops.
I'm freezing.
I was just going to say. You beat me to that, Mark. Well done.
Well, Rockler is excited to announce.
Someone's going to write in from Florida now. Like, what the hell, guys? You guys aren't very inclusive of us here in Florida.
It's like it's just one episode, guys. We're just going to bag on Florida for one episode. And then we'll
what state's
on.
Next?
Moving on to New Jersey after this.
We embrace the South Park motto. If you make fun of everyone, they can't get in trouble.
Yeah. That didn't work for me in my last video. I got to tell you that. Yeah. Rockler is excited to announce the opening of their latest store just outside of Tampa in Brandon, Florida. You may be missing out if you haven't been to a Rockler store lately. You'll find a large number lumber selection. This is what happens when I don't read this ahead of time. You'll find a large lumber selection, top power tool brands and accessories, dust collection, router tables, T-Track, hardware, and more. Rockler stores also host a variety of classes and events. Visit rockler.com to find a store near you, or stop by the new Tampa store for special grand opening events through April. No matter which location you visit, you can always count on Rockler for innovative products, expert advice, and exceptional customer service. So, Florida listeners, get over there.
That's cool.
Near Tampa. That's great. Have you guys ever been to Florida?
Yep.
Yeah.
Sure. When, it's
been a
when
while.
I grew up in New Jersey, Florida was the ultimate go-to vacation spot. Like, no one talked about going anywhere else. Like, West Coast, forget about it. It was always going to Florida.
Yeah.
It's kind of an interesting thing.
Based on the number of people from New Jersey I've seen in Florida, I can see that.
New Jersey and New York, that's where all the retirees go.
Yeah, a lot of strong Jersey accents in the beaches of Florida.
Yeah, that's great. Sounds like a place I need to go. Pretty humid there, though. I remember all the like afternoon thunderstorms in Miami.
I can remember when my brother passed in review from Navy boot camp in Orlando, Florida, and it rained that they couldn't use the parade grounds for graduation, so they moved us into a gymnasium. It was like 98 degrees and 100% humidity in the gymnasium. God. And those guys out on the floor standing at full attention with rifles on their shoulders, you would just see like a head disappear from the crowd as one guy passed out. And then like over here, another guy disappears. Another Jeez. Guy. It's like something like half his boot class passed out on the floor. Yeah. That's my memory of Florida. Good times.
Sounds great.
Woof.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, go check out that store, Brandon, Florida. If you want to check it out, and a grand opening is a great time to get to know your Rockler store with the different events. Maybe they have some sales. I don't know. Go check it out. Go support them if you want them to stick around.
Maybe you'll win that gift card.
You could. Did you notice the window for that? I noticed the date on that. This gift card giveaway thing is going to be for quite some time. You have through April to get in there. So take advantage of it. Okay, so all of our questions today are going to be more or less kind of a group discussion. It's not questions for any one individual. So this one comes from Sean Kent, and it's about woodworking magazines. He says, started listening to your podcast a little over a year ago, and I've been working my way through the immense backlog of content. It's overwhelming. I tried to start at the beginning, and I only made it a few episodes in before skipping ahead to the new Matt. What's up with that? What do you got against Vanderlist and me reading from scripts?
Apparently a lot.
Actually, I think you did the right thing. I mean, you want the historical reference to know where things came from, but you don't have to torture yourself by listening
to
all those.
You just need a reference, just a reference.
Quick reference.
Like the whole thing.
Yeah, you know where it came from and then move right along. Somewhere along the line, there was a conversation about the flood of differing options or methods on YouTube or other social media platforms. I was wondering if you had any recommendation on 2 to 3 magazine subscriptions worth the time and money. Well, I guess this is getting a lot easier over time. I mean, there probably are only 2 or 3 left.
Can you think of more than 2 or 3?
All right. So I'm just going to go off the top of my head here. I have to confess, I don't really read a lot of woodworking magazines anymore. I don't think you could ever, at least from what I've seen at any stage in their development, unlike some other magazines that kind of have a little bit of an ebb and flow. Pop Woodworking has been a little bit rocky. It's been great and not great, and then great again, and then not great over time. It's not as consistent. So let's say Fine Woodworking. I don't know that Fine Woodworking has ever gone downhill in my eyes. I think they make a great product, good information. You subscribe long enough, you may see that typical turnover of topics that generally happens, but that's, you know, it's a magazine. What are you going to do? So I'm going to put Fine Woodworking on that list. What do you guys recommend?
Mortise and Tenon. It's certainly more on the hand tool bent, but Mortise and Tenon magazine to me is almost like a scholarly journal than anything else. It's really well made, physically high quality, but I like that they've continued to pull a lot of different authors in. It's never the same authors each time around, which is kind of, you know, I start to get a little malaise from Fine Woodworking. It's always high quality, but it's always the same voices. They've gotten better at it in recent years, but Mortise and Tenon, you just, it's a lot like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
What's the frequency? Because it's still, I mean, it's an event when one of those comes out.
Quarterly?
I think that's kind of good. I think when you get inundated with these things and you like just get a pile.
Maybe it's biannually. I don't know.
I don't think it's quarterly. Right. I think quarterly is too frequent.
Yeah, I think it might be twice a year. I don't know now.
But it's a very different since publication. I've gotten one. It's more book-like, right?
Yes.
Like than typical magazine fare.
I think it might be once a year.
Huh.
I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, but
that's good though.
It's good. It's good stuff.
Maybe.
Matt, you got a suggestion?
Yeah, I guess maybe. So I can base this stuff like what I actually read now. I still get some of these magazines come to the house, but I'll be honest, I don't really spend much time with them. Like I leaf through them. I'm like, okay, cool. Project articles have like zero relevance to me. Like I don't really look at those at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I can just tell you based on where I'm at right now in my woodworking life and journey, what I actually read. It's the SAFM journals.
Heck yeah.
So they do a yearly publication and they also do quarterly e-publications. And those, like if I read anything woodworking related, it's going to be those publications.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just where I'm at with.
That is a scholarly journal. Like Morrison Tennant's kind of like it, but you know, the SAFM, what is that magazine called? That has a name.
I think journal.
It's just the annual.
The annual journal. And then the quarterly ones is like Pins and Tails.
Yeah.
Something like some kind of dovetail reference name.
Okay. You know, I haven't read a lot of these, but I think it's worth mentioning some of the other ones. Woodworker's Journal. I mean, that's the thing. A lot of people are working their butts off to make good articles for these magazines. And if we're not, I don't want to dismiss them because we don't happen to read them, but they're definitely there. Woodsmith is generally.
That was going to be my next suggestion. And especially I think as a newer woodworker, I loved that magazine. The projects in there are very approachable, but like infinitely customizable.
Right.
And they're always really good at like full size drawings because they make a lot of smaller projects. So there was none of this, like as I was new, like the template wasn't something I had to blow up or like, you know, trace the grid or any of that. I could just, in many instances, it was included. There was like a, you know, a heavier paper in there.
Yeah, you could pull it out. The stock is a little heavier.
Yeah, I still to this day, like I actually, that was a magazine that I went and actually bought like the archives and the binders.
Right.
I bought a couple of those because I really enjoyed the stuff and it's still very, very approachable to this day. And they published some of my stuff. So.
Well, you know, they're good then. They passed.
Wait a minute.
Popular Woodworking, of course, you know, there's been some changes there.
They've also published some of my stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
They've made some changes recently and it does seem like they are making a really solid effort to just make a great magazine. My suggestion for the rest of these.
Go figure, the editor-in-chief used to be at Woodsmith.
Yep. Oh, there you go.
Logan is now the editor-in-chief of Popular Woodworking. So
yeah. I mean, he seems good like he's doing a great job there. I would recommend going to the newsstand if you can and see if you can't just leaf through some of these, because that's the thing. I don't know where you're at in your woodworking, what you're interested in. Look at these magazines and see which one is currently covering stuff you're interested in. I don't want to dismiss some of the ones that we don't currently read just because that's where we're at. But definitely worth checking some of those out. And you might find some that we didn't mention here.
Going to the newsstand.
Yeah.
What year is
that? Do that, right? Like a, you know, 80s
movie. Head on down
to
your local newsstand and pick up that.
When they're in New York City and they walk by and there's a newsstand. That,
get
that
a hot dog.
Extra, extra. Latest popular woodworking.
No,
some listen. Little boy in a cap, you know, hand you a popular woodworking.
Whenever we go to Barnes and Noble, I can't help but go to the periodical. Is that what it is? The periodical section.
Yeah.
And look at all the stuff that I'm
that's
like.
That's the library.
No.
Don't they just is call it? Them magazines at Barnes and Noble?
I don't know. What? Look it up.
They got a newsstand. That's what they call it. Don't
they? Well, listen, there's magazines there.
Did you mention Wood Magazine?
I did not mention Wood Magazine. I also didn't mention Woodcraft Magazine.
That's there you go.
I mean, there's still quite a few. Yeah,
there's some good ones.
But it is interesting to go there and look at how different I view that stuff. Like, for instance, just other topics I'm interested in. Like in the past when I used to buy like a video game magazine and I'm just looking at all the stuff on the cover and thinking, wow, I've already read about that like 2 months ago. Like the news cycle is so different now that it's really hard for those things to even, I mean, woodworking's different because it's techniques that kind of just don't get old and who cares if it's old information. But yeah, I don't know. It's very interesting. But go to your newsstand and buy a chocolate bar as Spider-Man swings above you. It's kind of the scene awesome. I'm seeing in my head.
See, if that would happen, I would go to newsstand.
It'd be cool. Worth it.
Seriously.
That's okay. What they need.
I think, Matt, you got the next one.
Yeah, I do. This is from Art. Art's over at Wood Words and Wood. Sorry, Art. He's got a YouTube channel and he's on the socials and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is in response to episode 519, the subject of social media changing. Changes are coming. All right. Art got into Instagram a few years ago, as that seemed to be the place for woodworking creators and related stuff. I also use Facebook, but more for family and friend connections. But I also have subscribed to a bunch of woodworkers on Facebook. Over the past year, I've noticed a lot of creatives have started using a company, I think it's called Jelly Smack, to take over their Facebook account. The service takes their YouTube videos, cuts and re-edits them down in size, and puts them on Facebook and other social media to pay the creator a percentage. I can't fault the creators because we all want to, or rather need to, make a living. But what has happened is I now have gone through unsubscribing to a lot of woodworkers on Facebook because I'm really, really tired of seeing rehashed videos, which I've already seen. And I'm somewhat afraid that the same thing is going to happen on Instagram. I've loved Instagram as I get these. Sorry, it's like some child beating the floor above me. I don't know if you can hear that.
I'm just trying to wonder.
Are you recording?
Trying to figure that out.
I was like, yeah, that's this the dining room right above me. I've loved Instagram as I get these unscripted shot short between behind the scene type pictures and videos snippets from my other for many creators. This also gets taken over by these companies just rehashing these YouTube videos. I think it's going to kill the platform, at least as far as this, at least as much as I'm in. Wow. Oh my God. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
At least as far as much interest to me, I've already started seeing it with one creator. Ooh. Who pray tell is this one creator?
Oh, I don't know. There's a lot of them, though.
This has mostly been an observation. So let's at least try and bring this around to a question. We already know that YouTube comments can be a mess. They can be overwhelming. If creators abandon Facebook and then Instagram, what do you use for interaction with followers? And what do you use for behind-the-scenes type content?
Hmm. Okay. Well, he's right. There's a company called Jelly Smack. I'm sure there will be other if there aren't already. In fact, when I went through our email, the Wood Talk email, there was an offer from a company that will take your old content and put it on TikTok. And they're Sweet. Actually talking about audio podcasts here. Wow. So I deleted it. But I do work with Jelly Smack. It was a very difficult and weird decision-making process to decide whether to do something like this. The thing I agreed to with them was to have them working on platforms that I didn't currently take advantage of or have lost interest in. The problem is, I don't think that Jelly Smack is the cause of a problem, or companies and creators doing this is necessarily the cause. It's the symptom. It's something that's happening because there's already a problem on those platforms. Those platforms reward a certain type of content, and people reward that same content with views. The problem is it works and the numbers grow, and having a company do this, it just makes sense. So I just think that this is more of the same. It's just heading down further into a path of these platforms being less fun for people who are really interested in niching down into a topic to get that sort of authentic stuff. Instead, what you're going to get if you follow someone on Facebook is these recycled old videos you've probably already seen, edited into a less attractive format for people who want information, who aren't just kind of window shopping or, you know, kind of looking at this stuff from a very, you know, not a very high level.
I think the problem that Art has, like the overarching one, is that he's been following us and been involved in the community for so long that he has seen all these things we did 6 years ago.
Right.
But guess who hasn't? Most people.
Yeah.
They have no idea we did these things. That's a great way to put it.
Most people, like everyone else. There's a lot of people.
That's what it really comes down to. And that content we made back then is still valuable when, like, YouTube doesn't have like a rerun feature. Like, I can't reserve it unless I literally re-upload it and post it a second time.
And in fact, they're pretty terrible about taking older content and pushing it forward.
That doesn't really go well either. So,
right.
You know, that's one way for us to get more life out of the content that we created.
Yeah.
How many years ago? This is the side effect. You're going to see stuff you've seen already.
Funny, and I think just like the magazines we were just talking about, where
it's exactly like that.
You know, it has to be recycled because somebody, you know, they don't care that I've done like 17 videos on cutting dovetails. I just, you know, recently did a video on cutting dovetails and it's been like, it's still going gangbusters. You know, it's like ridiculously popular. It's like, really? Like this stuff's been there all the time. But yeah, it's, unless you physically like click on someone's channel and then click on the video tab.
Which like most people don't do.
Scroll down. You can't actually get to this old stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes they'll have, if the channel's well organized, there'll be playlists that you can follow. But, you know, then you have to specifically seek that out. None of that stuff is going to be served up.
Well, and I think he says, you know, is this going to ruin IG or is it going to kill, you know, Instagram? It's already dead.
If you guys want to go on there,
it's already we need there. To talk past tense on that one.
Yeah. I mean, this has been happening as, I mean, really the thing that at least had me throwing up a red flag was as soon as the acquisition occurred with Facebook. That was the beginning of the end, and they were going to Facebook-ify. Facebook was already trash by that time. Is going to Facebook-ify Instagram. Well, it's happening. And now the TikTok influence is taking place there too. And the problem is, you know, when you put a person in a position like you were saying, Matt, where you've got all this old content, we do have to find ways to make revenue. And the best way to make revenue or easiest way is to go back into this library of things we've created and rehash it for a new audience. The problem is, and I think where Art is, you know, the issue I think he really has with this is the fact that you kind of lose that connection with people. But it's already done. Like it's already happening and you have to find that new place. So to answer his question, where do we connect with those people? And I can say for me personally, there are a few places I do this. You know, when I worked with Jelly Smack, the thing I did not let them have access to is my YouTube channel. That's a primary thing for me. I don't want someone else mixing content for me on that platform. If it ever gets to a point that YouTube is just garbage and I don't want to participate there anymore, well, there might be an opportunity for me to take a step back and let a company come in and remix content there. But I'm not there yet. So I continue to connect with people on YouTube. I continue to connect with people. Still, I'm on Instagram. As far as general social media goes, it's still a platform that I pay attention to. I'm talking to people constantly all day long on there for now. There's always, of course, each person kind of having their own silo, you know, sort of by Patreon and YouTube memberships. So there are ways, of course, those are fee-based, but there are ways where you could have those conversations there. And then for me, speaking personally, the Guild is certainly a place where I have great conversations with woodworkers. But again, another, you know, sort of paywall sort of thing. And unfortunately, I think that's where it's going. If you want genuine interactions with creators, that might be the only safe place left is if they have their own, you know, supported area, Patreon type thing or a paid service, that's where you're going to get a hold of those people. I'm not saying it's great. I'm just saying that's probably how it's going to go.
I don't know. I think it's great. I mean, just speaking personally and forgetting the fact that I make money doing this, but I mean, the conversations that I have in the Hand Tool School forum and through like direct messages in the Hand Tool School are so much better, so much more constructive, so much more fulfilling. You filter
out a lot of garbage.
Yeah. And I mean, to be fair, like you can gain access to the Hand Tool School community forum by buying a product. Like you go and buy a $10 lesson on my site and you will have lifetime access to that community forum. Mm-hmm. So the barrier, the price to entry is not that big of a deal.
It's just not zero.
Yeah. And, but here again, you know, I think even on a platform like Facebook has seen the growth of groups because people started to say, look, I don't want this white noise. I want to silo this out. So they build a group. And to this day, like if I open the Facebook app, most of what I'm seeing is still group fed. It's driven by the groups that I belong to.
Yeah, me too.
So, you know, this is where the interaction happens because it's just easier. But it also tends to be the people that honestly, like, want to hear from you, honestly have a question, honestly have something to talk about. To what I've discovered on even something like Instagram is it tends to be, I don't know, it's either a showing off, like somebody's posting a comment to say, look how, you know, important I am. Or I find a lot of like inside jokes, like especially as related to this show. Like you post something and people will post like something that tells you they listened to Wood Talk like a couple episodes ago.
Yeah.
You know, I get a lot of comments about, you know, oh, you did this. Now you need to go tell Mark and Matt to do that. Or I'm responding to the opposite, like the latest, you know, someone saying I need to now buy a saw stop since you guys have a saw stop. So yeah, the actual like interaction that's happening generally behind the paywall now. That's probably a bit of me sticking my fingers in my ears and humming a tune, but hey, it works. It's enjoyable to me.
Yeah. Matt, where do you see your interactions heading?
I see the most, I still have the most interactions on Instagram, just in the DMs.
Yeah.
But I'm so disillusioned with like the platform as a whole. I don't put any effort there anymore. Like I used to, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, it'd be like, I got to make content specific for Instagram. I'm posting like at least once a day, usually multiple times a day. Now I'm like, I don't really care. I'll post whatever, whenever, if I have something interesting, and only a small fraction of my audience is going to see it anyway. But the small fraction is the people that are actually like care.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. So there's that still too. So I'm still there participating, but I'm not really putting the effort in like I used to at all. As far as like putting stuff out there.
It's a weird moving target. And I think when I look at what I've done with Facebook, we built up an audience. There was, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of people that follow that page, but Facebook ruined it for me. Facebook turned it into an environment where I couldn't actually communicate with that audience unless I paid money. I started to very quickly lose interest in that. And then I also found that the things that I did post that did get attention wound up finding their way in front of other people who are not even necessarily woodworkers, who just make my life miserable by making stupid comments. As a creator, that becomes real not fun real fast. And that's when I sort of migrated over to Instagram, where I could find more like-minded, interested people who wanted to talk about woodworking and not politics or whatever garbage they wanted to bring into it. So I think the thing is, the platforms are just always, in our eyes, I mean, this may be monetarily successful for them and the numbers increase, but in our eyes, they're ruining these platforms. And we seem to platform jump until we keep find a place that we enjoy, so that 5 years later, we can all complain about it when it starts to go downhill. You know, that's just kind of the way it goes. So I don't know. I don't know what's next. You know, Matt has some good success on TikTok. TikTok is one of those places where I had trouble finding the time to make more content for it. And I do have Jelly Smack making content there now. And I'm not there personally being involved in it. So we'll see where that goes.
Honestly, it's the hardest part of TikTok. Like, as that's where I spend most of my time consuming content now. There's a lot of good stuff on there, but it's nothing like making content for Instagram or Facebook. There's like an actual time commitment to making that stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, at least the stuff that I want to make, it's like, oh, it's short form scripted content. So that's like actual, and they got like, basically, I'm making a video, making like a short YouTube video at that point.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, I got to commit an hour or two to producing a piece of content for a platform that doesn't really make any money, really. I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, I don't really want to. So I'm kind of going back and forth. I'm like, I should be posting there more, but maybe I need to do a little more like almost like Instagram stories kind of thing on TikTok. That might be the better way to approach it rather than these fully produced
keep it super casual
content. Yeah. I'm still trying to figure it out, I guess.
Dude, the stuff that like I have this conversation with Todd, our editor, a lot, because you know, he's like classic video guy, likes that 16:9, like any self-respecting person behind camera would. Mm-hmm. Not a big fan of the vertical stuff, but the one thing that I have noticed in the last year is the crap that I put the least effort into is the most statistically successful. So we could do like a short that is very well produced. I scripted it out. I got like everything packing in as much as I can into that minute will not perform as well as the thing that I just recorded on my phone and patched together very quickly myself. I didn't even involve Todd. I did it myself, put a little music, and that performs better. It's like the least amount of effort gets the most attention. So sometimes the overproduced stuff doesn't, it may not be worth it.
I agree with that. My experience is tracks the same, and I continue to be flummoxed. I'm like, seriously, that's what's doing well right now? I'm like, yeah. And it makes you question your whole life.
Yeah.
How much time did I just put into that bit of content or project or whatever? Yeah.
It's, yeah.
And I'm also still trying to figure out, like, is it worth me doing more YouTube shorts and going and like fleshing out that? But then I'm like, I don't know. Like, the audience is weird. Like, it's just a lot.
I've noticed on YouTube, they are keeping their promise of compartmentalizing shorts so that when I do post a short, I don't find many people complaining about it because the people who don't like them aren't being served those videos.
Can they do that for live streams? Because that'd be amazing.
You know what the cure for that is, Matt?
Stop doing them.
Just stop doing them. Just stop doing them.
I can't let them win. I cannot let them win.
But to answer Art's question, that is a tactic that I still use for communicating. I quite enjoy live streams on YouTube, and I believe me, I get a lot of flack. People are like, oh, you're going to do is live now. I hate live. But the fact of the matter is there's 300, 3,000 sometimes people showing up to these things, asking questions. And I'm often shocked to hear, like, emails still work. I'm really old school. People email me. The number of people who tell me that, like, I can't get a response out of this creator, or, you know, I've written to you because I know you'll answer the question. I mean, that is still common. There's still a lot of influencers. There's still a lot of people with paywall membership sites that don't respond. Like, that's not part of what you're getting. So in many instances, like, I get new woodworkers who show up on my live streams and they just love the fact that they have a place to go to get an answer to a question.
And someone will actually reply.
Right. And you know, and I've said this on the show before, I've kind of graduated into the point that the thing that I really love about woodworking is actually teaching now. I really, really enjoy it. So these live streams on YouTube are fantastic because you get an opportunity to answer someone's question by demonstrating something. And to me, that is a fantastic place to engage with customers. And from a business perspective, it's a top of the sales funnel thing that produces incredibly well for me. These people come in and ask a question, they get a good answer, and oh, well, maybe I should join a school. And yeah, it works pretty
well. But this again is like the same self-sabotaging nature of some of these platforms and the choices they make and how this stuff is presented that I just, then this is what Matt is alluding to. You do these live shows, the kick in the nuts is you get to see your subscriber count go down.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They are non-existent after they happen.
Yeah. It's set up to fail. But what you've actually done with that live show is you've talked to the people who are most interested, potentially your most engaged customers and engaged viewers, which is very important to do. But then the statistics are what will tell you, wow, that was a bad idea. You shouldn't do that anymore.
Oh yeah. I mean, my YouTube channel is a sign of what not to do. I mean, I've been since YouTube started. You know, it's more than 10 years now. I've got thousands of videos on that channel. I haven't looked recently. I think I have 70,000 subscribers. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like the growth of that channel, it's everything that I shouldn't do. I've never done a good job.
You've succeeded in spite of yourself.
I have succeeded at failing really well on YouTube. But, you know, I'm just not suited for that platform, apparently.
Yeah,
but I still enjoy it. I still enjoy posting there.
We're very much in the same boat. You know, you weren't that far behind me in terms of starting making videos. I am probably, I would say, in the top five people who started in this category on YouTube, making, you know, DIY related or woodworking specific videos, in terms of being there first. But I'm definitely not even close to the most subscribed. Because I did everything the wrong way. I posted infrequently. I posted long videos when short videos were popular. Then I posted short videos when long videos got popular. Like, I just did what I wanted to do and cover the things I wanted to cover. And my numbers show it because the system rewards you for doing what the system tells you to do. So it's a really interesting thing. So thanks for that question, Art. We appreciate it. And apologize to those who don't like the social media and business talk, but you know, it's the second show. We always kind of diverge into that for the second show. We do have one more question though, Shannon, if you want to get that one.
And this one's about woodworking. So if you've hung on, Yay! Thanks. Here's
still
your
here.
Reward.
Welcome.
And I like this one. This is from Doug. He says, ever since the time of Norm, the time of Norm.
Oh, I remember that. The age of Norm.
That's a specific eon, actually.
Yeah.
There was the Cretaceous period, the Triassic, and then the time of Norm.
Time of Norm.
The Normic period. since the time of Norm, people have been making the comment, I could do that too if I had those tools. A comment that makes every woodworker spew their coffee. But it's really a tale of two scales, skill level and quality of tools. In my opinion, the skill level is most important and should be ahead of tool quality, if there must be an imbalance between the two. So the topic question discussed, does the time come when in order for my skill level to improve, my tool quality must be upgraded? For example, my first table saw was $100, a plastic case tabletop saw from a big box store, essentially a circular saw in a milk crate. I like that. I made a lot of workaround add-ons to help me get better quality cuts, but once I upgraded to my Grizzly table saw with the Biesemeyer Friends, wow, what a difference. Then after upgrading to a high-quality blade, now I can get glue-ready cuts from the saw. So for me, as a hobbyist woodworker, I work in the shop to relax and relieve stress. Working with junky tools does just the opposite. Talk amongst yourselves, basically.
Mm.
So,
I'm
with him on his initial statement that I think skill level should trump quality of tools.
But I
love his last point where I'm a hobbyist and I want to work to relieve stress. Having good quality stuff makes woodworking easier. There's no doubt. Not having to fight the tool or come up with 1,001 workarounds. Oh, it makes things so much more enjoyable.
Yeah, I don't think really good tools are going to make you a better woodworker. I think they're just going to remove barriers that are in your way. Obstacles that you just won't confront and make it more pleasurable, which is why you often see, you know, hobbyists having these insanely, you know, really well-appointed shops, and they're not a pro woodworker and they maybe only use it on the weekends. But they have expendable income. They put it into that. And man, do they enjoy their time when they're in the shop because they've got those tools. So it's like you could do a lot with cheap tools, but you have to jump through more hoops. You have to figure out other ways to do things. And it does require, I think, you developing a more well-rounded skill set to get around those problems.
I think there's the flip side of this is having like really, really high quality tools could in some respects actually stunt your growth as a woodworker.
Domino.
Because it does well. Yeah. That's always the knee-jerk example and everything.
Yeah.
Like how easy is it to throw together a table with the domino? For that matter, you know, how easy is it to throw together a table using loose tenon joinery? Well, if you're cutting it with a router, it actually can be a little bit more complex. If you're chopping them out, ooh crap.
That happens in someone else's shop, as far as I'm concerned. Not in my shop.
I mean, I've had this question as well, where some of these tools, these higher end tools with incredible precision and incredible bells and whistles, actually make woodworking like less woodworking and more just kind of like plug and play.
And
that's an evolution of these. We've solved a bunch of different problems. And, you know, the pro woodworkers, I think of like the generation above us, pro woodworkers, and generation, maybe two generations removed. You look at like the stereotypical cabinet maker, the Frank Klaus type guy, or sorry, Chuck Bender.
Seeing Chuck's old.
I realized as soon as I was saying that, that's how that comes out. And he knows where I live. So that's a problem.
Chuck would probably be like, I don't think that's accurate there, Shane.
I think
you should take that back.
But, you know, one of the things that I loved about taking classes from a guy like Chuck Bender is he's got so much experience and he spent so much of his woodworking career making things work.
Hang on. Did you say you're talking about Chuck Bender? I'm thinking of Charles Brock.
Okay. Well,
which was where my imitation and terrible impression came from.
I was
from.
Wondering, like, oh, okay.
Because that's not weird. How Chuck Bender talks.
No, but if you were assuming that Chuck Bender is old, that's how Chuck Bender would sound.
So. Okay, well, but if I'm going to do my impression of Chuck Bender, it's going to involve a lot of hand movement.
Yes, that's true. Lots of hand movements.
Yes. So imagine, listeners, I'm moving my hands as I'm talking.
Very excitedly.
Sorry, oh, God. I got my chucks mixed up. You don't want to mess up your chucks.
But, you know, either one of those would be a good example. These are guys that have had, you think about Charles Brock. We'll just do that to make it easier. When he was developing his sculpted rocker, you know, the Maloof company really to this day is still very close to the vest, obviously, for this iconic piece that they own the rights to. He was kind of figuring it out. And like his initial video, I don't know if he's redone that. I think it's still the same video, but there's a lot of kind of workaround type solutions in there. And I think that ends up making, that enhances your skill dramatically. And all of these, I'll just go ahead and offend them all. All of these crusty old woodworkers have had that experience. And, you know, they continue to roll their eyes at us, you know, new guys that have had all these great tools that have all these features that, you know, basically those features are developed because the crusty old woodworker's going, this sucks. And I've had to do this and I had to
need
do
a
this
solution.
So, you know, they will always be better woodworkers than us because they had to learn the hard way how to do it.
It's weird because like you do get better at a thing, the more problems you have to solve, right? It's only natural. You get more practice at it. You get to thinking outside the box, but once a problem is solved, and this goes back to the domino, once the problem is solved, well, do you ever need to make that classic mortise and tenon again? You have the domino, and I get it. Yeah, the domino might malfunction and now you're stuck, but let's assume that it doesn't. I've had one of the original dominoes to be, you know, to come off the line, and mine still works great. So like, does it get to a point where you go, well, yeah, now we could put that behind us. The person using the domino is no worse off because he's not actually making these a traditional way. He's just doing it faster.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing. Matt, you got any thoughts on this? We're monopolizing all the time here.
Oh, no, not really. Just the usual, like, I think there's definitely like a fine line here. Because on like one side of it, if you have crappy tools that are not fun to use, then you're not going to want to use them. And it's going to be terrible. And you're not going to enjoy your time doing this hobby you picked up. And then when are you going to go do woodworking? Because you're like, this isn't fun. Yeah. On the other side of it, the coin, it's like, well, if you have like really fancy stuff and everything just works perfectly all the time, you've never struggled, you never learned why you do things a certain way, and you might go down some weird roads and start building things in a weird way that you don't quite understand.
That's interesting. Yeah, you can miss out on some fundamental kind of knowledge. That's an interesting perspective.
Well, I think, again, I hate to keep harping on domino, it's just the easy go-to solution, but to use the domino,
if we don't, someone would. So go ahead.
It's like there are certain things, certain hoops you will have to jump through to get it set up properly just to avoid doing it. What would actually at that point be the easier way to do it with a router and maybe some kind of a guide, right? Like you might find yourself jumping through these hoops to get the domino to do what you needed to do. When if you had the skill set to just chop a mortise where you needed it, you could have had that done in a simpler way, let's say.
Yeah.
Kind of shoehorning it in there. Well, there's no right or wrong in anything like this, right? It's like everybody's on their own journey. Make the stuff you want to make using the stuff you want to use. But it's always fun to kind of ponder these issues.
Ooh.
Okay. Well, I think we're done, right?
I think that's it.
And thanks for
rolling that beautiful Rockler footage.
Oh yeah. Well, family owned since 1954, Rockler is your go-to source for high quality and innovative woodworking tools, finishing supplies, hardware, lumber, and expert advice. Whether you're building a simple bookshelf, a custom desk, or new kitchen cabinets, Rockler has everything you need to make your next project a success. Visit rockler.com for a store near you or use the code WOODTALK, that's all one word, online to receive free shipping on most orders over $39. And remember to head to rockler.com/woodtalk to get in on that $250 gift card. What a deal. $250.
What a deal.
What a deal. All you got to do is go and put some information into a form, hit enter, and then wait for them to call your name.
Enter to win your chance to supermarket sweep Rockler.
Woo-hoo! That's awesome. I'll take it all.
I'm all for that. That sounds like,
Just sounds
fun to see that.
So much.
Which aisle would you shoot for, like, first? If you, and let's assume it's more than $250. Let's like you truly a supermarket sweep situation. You're going to the lumber.
Yeah, I'm gonna get those exotics. Load them up.
It's trying to sweep power tools into a cart doesn't work real well.
I might go to the router bit stand. Like in terms of density and value in a small space, give me that.
Is it locked though? Is it behind the case still?
Just put the whole case in the cart. I don't care.
Seriously,
you gotta go get the key.
What's the sticker value of like 300 Whiteside bits? You know,
right?
You could fit 300 bits into a cart pretty easily.
Yeah, I mean 30, 40, 50 bucks that's a bit. Good. Like,
yeah, that's true. That's a value dense.
That's dense area. Right there. I'm going for the router bits.
Actually, I am so gonna watch Supermarket strategy. Sweep after this show.
Go do it, man.
Well, thank you folks for always sending us in questions. Even on this kind of second show of the month, we get some interesting things that make you go, type questions. So thank you for that.
Those guys apparently, are weird.
It just goes to show you we can spend an hour talking about anything, woodworking or not. So this show is a good example of that. So please send us an email, woodtalkshow@gmail.com. That's probably the easiest way to get questions into us, or go to woodtalkshow.com. There is actually a website there. I build the pages every single month. No one ever looks at it, but it's there. We have an Instagram account, Wood Talk Show, and I want to bring that up because I want to say thank you to Margaret. She's doing, as usual, a great job managing our social media accounts. Always some fun stuff going on there. And at the same time, this podcast you're listening to right now was mixed, and I actually sound great because of the work of Nick Key, who's doing our editing. So,
I sound great.
Because believe me, the raw quality of whatever, the gremlins in my system always make my stuff sound weird. So
nobody wants Shannon in the raw.
Oh, boy.
Just a known thing.
Yeah, that happened.
There's the show title. You got to get to the very end of the show to hear that show title, I think.
Shannon in the raw. kind of sounds like a movie I wouldn't want to watch.
Yep.
Oh, Lord. Okay, well, thank you for listening, everybody, and we will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.